Clava, a deranged sweet smile consuming her pale, slender face. When God spoke to Noah and told him to build the ark, he told him to save the animals, not the people. The people needed to be taught a lesson. They needed to die. "What is this woman on?" Jesse cried. "Somebody call the police!" Barker started to scream behind the gloved hand, his eyes wide and staring at Julia. She felt as though she was looking into the eyes of a dead man. She held back her tears, knowing she had to remain strong. She had to fix her mess. "I know what happened to your daughter," Julia said, taking another baby step forward. "Bethany, I know she was murdered by a homeless man, right there, on that path. I know she was walking him back from the soup kitchen and that he attacked her. I can't imagine what that feels like. But this isn't the answer." "You're right," Max spat, his nose so wrinkled and tight he no longer resembled a human. "You can't know what that feels like. None of you can. We did nothing but help these disgusting people, and that's how they repay us. By taking our daughter." The crack in Max's voice broke Julia's heart. For a moment she saw the eyes of a grieving father, not a murderer. "Just because the awful, evil man who took your Bethany was homeless, it doesn't mean you need to punish every homeless person." "We're making the world a better place," Stella repeated. "They're a disease." "I know you don't believe that," Julia whispered, stepping closer, her palms spread wide. "You put your love into your soup to help these people. You care about these people." "God," Stella started, her voice trailing off as her bottom lip wobbled uncontrollably. "God wouldn't ask you to kill," Julia said, smiling through her own pain. "Would he, Stella? Remember what you told me about the dead. They never really leave us. What would Bethany say if she saw you like this? You said she walks beside you. If that's true, she's here right now, seeing you do this." Stella looked desperately from Julia to Max, searching for answers from the devil and angel on her shoulders. Max tightened his grip on Barker, his arms secure around his throat. Beads of sweat trickled down Barker's bright red face, his eyes darting from Julia to the shocked crowd that she could feel gathering behind her. "Max," Stella pleaded, "what does God say?" "I think Max lost his faith when you lost Bethany," Julia whispered, stepping within reaching distance of the needle. "Isn't that right, Max? You can't speak to God any more than I can." "I'm tired of this," Max cried, his grip tightening so firm around Barker's neck that the detective inspector's eyes started to flutter. "Give me the needle, Stella." Out of the corner of her eye, Julia spotted movement. She didn't turn to look, but she could sense a slow, lumbering figure edging closer to Max. She wanted to cry out, to stop them doing anything stupid, but she couldn't take her eyes away from Barker's fluttering lids. "Stella," Julia choked, unable to hold back the tears anyway. "You loved your daughter, didn't you?" "Of course she did," Max barked. "We both did." "Well, I love this man." Julia stepped forward, not caring if Stella lashed out with the needle. "Don't take him from me before I've even had a chance to get to know his middle name or his favourite colour. Please, Stella. I'm not a mother, but you know I understand loss. Remember when I told you about my mother? I understand your anger. I understand your desperation to believe you're doing the right thing. But you're not. This is your first time even holding a needle at somebody, isn't it? All the other times Max was on his own, wasn't he? Stella nodded, tears streaming down her face as she stared down at the needle. I didn't understand when he told me what he had done, but when he told me it was an order from God, I knew we had to finish his mission. There's no mission, Julia mumbled through her tears. Please, stop this. The lumbering movement came into Julia's full view, and she involuntarily turned her head. So did Max, but not quick enough to duck out of the way of the solid gas canister heading for his skull. With a solid thud, Max let go of Barker, swayed on the spot for a moment, and collapsed into a groaning heap. Enough talking! Tommy cried, dropping the gas canister and stumbling into the fence, his legs giving out without the aid of his stick. Hold him down, boys! Three men rushed forward, all of them jumping on Max like a pack of starving dogs on a sliver of meat. She expected them to hit the unconscious man. She wouldn't stop them if they did. To her surprise, they just pinned him to the ground. I'm sorry, Stella whispered, her eyes as wide as the moon in the sky as she lifted the needle up. Bethany, Mummy is coming. Julia heard her own cries echo around the industrial park. She dove forwards, her hand clutching Stella's wrist. The frail woman didn't fight. She relaxed her hand and dropped the needle to the ground. In that moment, every muscle in Stella's body seemed to vanish, and she crumbled like her husband had. Julia caught her, and they both fell to the ground. As Stella sobbed, Julia wrapped her arms around the poor woman's shoulders and pulled her in, as though she was her mother. She felt every ounce of her grief, every drop of her pain, every tear she had shed for her daughter. That agony consumed Julia. She didn't try to hold back her own sobs. Through her tears, she opened her eyes to see Barker clutching onto the fence, gasping for air. She knew some of her tears were for him. Her declaration of love echoed around in her mind, and she sobbed even harder, the fresh tears from a place of relief and elation rather than pain. Police sirens echoed in the distance, letting her know it was all over. She released her grip on Stella and let Jessie help her up off the ground. "I thought she was going to kill you," Jessie whispered through her tears as she buried her face into Julia's heavy overcoat. "You're so stupid." "I know," Julia said, gripping Jessie's head tight to her chest. "I'm so sorry." As uniformed officers stormed the scene, Julia caught Barker's eyes. Through his pain, he smiled at her. Rubbing his neck, he staggered forward, wrapping his arm around the both of them. He pressed his lips against Julia's head, his palm gripping the back of her head so tightly she couldn't help but feel safe. None of them let go until officers pried them apart, demanding statements from all of them. Chapter 16. Julia had never been in her cafe at sunrise, but as she hugged a mug of peppermint and licorice tea behind the counter, she began to wonder why she wasn't there every morning to witness the vibrant orange sky illuminating the grass. "Julia!" Dot cried as she stormed through the cafe full of everybody who had been at Fenton when Max and Stella had been arrested. "Oh, Julia, I thought you were dead!" Julia set her mug on the counter and let her gran hug her tightly until she practically couldn't breathe. When she finally managed to pull her away, guilt flooded her when it became obvious her gran hadn't slept. "What on earth is going on?" Dot cried. "Who are all these people? Where's Jessie?" "I'm here," Jessie stood up from the table she had been sharing with Tommy, pulling her hood down. "Come with me. I'll explain everything." Jessie looped her arm through Dot's and practically dragged her through to the kitchen as she stared around the full cafe, her mouth opening and closing, the questions appearing to flood her brain faster than her mouth could process them. Julia mouthed her thanks to Jessie, who winked in return.
"I've said it before, and I'll say it again. You're an extraordinary woman, Julia," Tommy said, motioning to the seat across from him. "Not many would do what you did tonight."
"I'm a stupid woman," she said as she sat down, glad to be off her feet. "I almost got Barker killed."
"If you hadn't been there, it would have been one of us."
There was a chorus of mumbled agreement through the mouthful of free cake and coffee. "I'm just glad it's all over," Julia said, letting out a sigh of relief.
"When I said not many would do what you did, I wasn't just talking about trying to catch that evil man," Tommy said thoughtfully as he leaned back in his chair. "A lesser person would have let Stella Moon take her own life."
"It wasn't even a decision," Julia said, over the second chorus of mumbled agreement. "She's already been through enough."
"And that's what makes you so great," Tommy said. "You did them all proud, Bailey, Michael, Robert, Mac, Jerry. You did those men proud tonight."
A round of applause ran through the cafe, and Julia smiled as gratefully as she could, even if she didn't feel very worthy of the applause.
"How did you figure it out?" a woman asked, through a mouthful of Victoria sponge.
"I didn't really," Julia said with a sigh, her eyebrows drifting up her forehead. "I owe that to Jessie. She was looking online, trying to find some help for you guys. You especially, Tommy. She did a search for Fenton, and she came across the article about Bethany Moon's murder just before Christmas."
"That was all a terrible business," Tommy said regretfully, bowing his head. "She was a lovely girl. Frank Benton was a monster. He wasn't one of us. He might have been homeless, but he wasn't welcome at Fenton. We all knew what he was capable of. There were rumours. I wish I could have done something to protect that poor girl. Maybe none of this would have happened if I was firmer on him."
"This isn't your fault, Tommy," a man said, leaning over and slapping him on the shoulder. "You've always tried your best for us. You were right there till the end." It suddenly struck Julia that none of them could really go back to Fenton Industrial Park tonight, or ever. Now that Carl Black owned it, it wouldn't be long before work started on his luxury apartments and a new community of people moved in. Julia scrambled her brain for a way she could help, but like Tommy had already told her, she couldn't help them all.
"Frank Benton took that poor girl's life, and they didn't even throw the book at him," Tommy said, his voice dropping to barely above a whisper. "I was there in court the day they sentenced him. They gave him life. But life doesn't mean life anymore, does it? He could be out in 15 years with good behaviour."
"That man doesn't know how to behave," another man jumped in. "He stole my only pair of shoes, you know." "Took my jacket," someone else added.
"He took a girl's life," Tommy reminded them. "I'm not surprised. Her father was driven to the brink of insanity."
"Using God as an excuse," the man jumped in again. "That's the real crime here."
"Max Moon lost his faith," Julia said, looking up at the ceiling, wondering if she had gained some in her experience tonight. "He killed those men not in the name of God, but in cold-blooded revenge. I suppose he killed Bailey to try and fix the pain, and when it didn't work, he kept doing it."
"And what about the wife? She was in on it too."
"I believe her when she said she didn't know," Julia said firmly, shifting in her seat.
I volunteered at that soup kitchen not long ago, and I know she didn't know then. I'm certain of it. She's diabetic, and she told me a box of her needles had gone missing. I knew it was connected. I just didn't expect that it was her husband who had taken them. What did they even inject?
Potassium chloride, Julia said, or at least that's what I think.
High levels of potassium were found in Mac's body.
We'll never know with the others, but I'm confident it was the same throughout. Of course, he strangled Jerry to death with his bare hands, because Jerry wasn't such an easy target.
How could a man like that even know how to get something so lethal? Tommy whispered, leaning across the table.
It's all out there on the internet, Julia said. One quick search and you've got a recipe for murder. All you really need to do is boil down some household bleach, and you're already halfway there. I wouldn't be surprised if he was cooking it up in the soup kitchen in the dead of night while Stella slept.
Frank Benton was a monster, but Max is just as bad, Tommy said, stamping his finger on the table. Grief isn't an excuse for murdering five men.
I agree, Julia said with a nod. But it does explain it, at least. There's never an excuse for murder.
I wouldn't mind getting my hands around Max's throat, the same man jumped in. An eye for an eye, I say.
Julia's cafe door opened, and Barker walked in, dark bruises on his throat. She immediately jumped up, leaving the conversation before it turned nasty. She hurried over to Barker, desperate to know what his examination had discovered.
"Light bruising and swelling," he croaked, rubbing at his purple throat. "It will heal itself, but I'll be talking like I've got a frog in my throat for the next couple of weeks."
"That's perfectly fine with me," Julia whispered as she pulled him into a hug. "You're okay. That's the main thing. Did you manage to find out what's happening to Max and Stella?"
"They've been taken to Esther's Way station in Cheltenham for questioning. It's out of our hands now," Barker said as he pulled away from the hug. "I do have some good news, though. They found my car, abandoned on a country lane, all smashed up, but they recovered what was in the boot."
"Small victories," Julia whispered with a wink. "Sit down. I'll make you a nice hot cup of honey and lemon tea for your throat." Barker sat across from Tommy, and Tommy immediately shook Barker's hand. Julia peered through the beads and chuckled when she saw her gran gasping in horror as Jessie explained everything that had happened, her hands telling most of the story. When she wrapped her hands around Dot's throat, Julia knew she was probably embellishing a little. She didn't doubt Jessie's version of events would be around the village by midday. Julia wouldn't be around to find out. For the first time since opening her cafe, she was putting a close sign in the window, and her and Jessie were going to catch up on some much-needed sleep, if their minds would allow.
"I'm disbanding my neighbourhood watch," Dot exclaimed, as they thrust through the beads. "I'm clearly not up to it."
"This didn't even happen in the village," Julia reassured her jokingly. "I'm not sure your binoculars would stretch all the way to Fenton."
"Even so, I should have spotted the signs that you were up to something," Dot said regretfully, before kissing Julia on the cheek. "I'd better go and call Sue to let her know you're okay. She'll be worried sick, sitting by the phone."
"Apologise from me, okay? Tell her I'll call later." Dot nodded and waved her hand as she walked through the cafe, eyeing the heavily dressed men and women with suspicion as she went. One by one, the last remaining residents of Fenton Industrial Park went their separate ways, some of them leaving together, some leaving alone, but all of them making sure to thank Julia before they went on their way. She wanted to ask each of them where they planned to go, but she stopped herself, knowing she wouldn't like the answers. There was one person she could help today, though, and she wasn't going to take no for an answer.
"Tommy, you're coming to mine," Julia ordered as she grabbed her jacket. "After a nice long sleep and a relaxing bath,
We're going to figure something out for you.
Tommy stood up, laughing and shaking his head as he rested his weight on his stick. He walked over to the door, and Julia almost thought he was going to leave, but he opened the door and waited for them. With Barker and Jessie by her side, they walked out into the fresh morning air. She looked up at the pale sky, more grateful than ever for breathing the fresh air of a new day.
"Are you going to join us, Barker?"
Julia asked as they walked towards his cottage.
"I think I'll resume my bubble bath," Barker said as he unhooked his gate. "I suspect I'll have to run a fresh one, but I'd like to finish my soak and pretend all of this never happened. Well, maybe most of it at least."
He winked at her before turning and heading towards his cottage. She knew exactly what part he was talking about, and it caused a smile to spread across her face.
"You so love him,"
Jessie whispered, jabbing her in the ribs as they walked up to their cottage. "I told you he had the hots for you." Smiling up at the sky, Julia didn't even bother denying it. She had meant it when she said she loved Barker. She didn't know how or why. She just knew she did. And it had never felt so good to admit it to herself, possibly for the first real time in her whole life.
Chapter 17. When Julia returned from the shops late in the afternoon, Jessie was still fast asleep in bed. Julia's own sleep had been cut short when Mowgli had pawed at her face, so she'd decided to make use of the day after a prolonged soak in the bath with a cup of peppermint and licorice tea.
"Afternoon," Tommy said, as Julia dumped the shopping bags on the counter. "I hope you don't mind, but I used your house phone."
"Not at all," Julia said, as she shrugged her coat off, walking through to the hallway to hang it on the hat stand by the door.
"She's been out like a light all morning," Tommy said with a gentle smile. "You can almost pretend she's a normal kid when she's asleep. I didn't sleep much myself. How can you after what happened?"
"Who did you call?"
"I decided to swallow my pride and call my brother," Tommy said, his fingers nervously drumming on the countertop. "I haven't spoken to him in 15 years, but he still had the same number. It's the only one I know by memory. We talked a lot of things out, and I'm sure we're going to talk even more over a couple of beers. But he said I can go and stay with him and his family up in Manchester until I get back on my feet."
"That's amazing news."
"Seeing you and Jessie together reminded me what family meant." Tommy smiled tightly as he glanced up at the ceiling. "I've been hiding from mine for too long. It's time I faced my mistakes and got my life sorted out. I have you to thank for all of this. And before you tell me it's what anyone else would have done, it's not. Not at all, Julia South. They don't make them like you any more."
Julia didn't argue. Tommy's words touched her, so all she could do was smile her thanks before filling the kettle to make him a coffee. As long as he was her guest, she would continue to look after him. "I'll cover your train fare," Julia said, as she poured fresh milk into the coffee. "I won't take no for an answer."
"I hadn't even thought about that," Tommy chuckled. "I suppose I'll have to join the rest of the world and start worrying about money. I'll pay you back when I'm sorted out. My brother thinks he can get me a cleaning job at the place he works at. Part-time, but I'm not far off retirement as it is."
"I won't accept a penny from you," Julia said, as she set the coffee in front of him. "Have you eaten?"
"You're going to make somebody a great mum one day,"
Tommy said with a soft smile.
"Well, I suppose you already have, actually."
At that moment, Jessie staggered through from her bedroom, her long dark hair matted at the side, and her eyes still half closed.
"What time is it?" she croaked.
"Just gone 4.
I slept like a log, Jessie muttered through a yawn.
Us too, Tommy said, sending a wink in Julia's direction.
Jessie climbed onto a stool next to Tommy, her hands instantly diving in for his coffee. He let her take it, so Julia refilled the kettle and made him a second cup.
I got you a present in town, Julia said as she fished through the bags. I know it's not your birthday until next month, but this is separate.
Julia placed the mobile phone box, which had been gift-wrapped in red paper with a white bow, in front of Jessie. She rubbed her eyes and frowned up at Julia, staring down her nose in the way only Jessie did.
What is it?
Open it and find out, Julia whispered, leaning against the counter. It's a token of my appreciation for you staying awake all night and keeping watch over us.
Jessie forced out a yawn as she ripped back the packaging. Her eyes widened when she saw the shiny white mobile phone box.
The man said it was the latest model, Julia said, unsure of what Jessie's reaction was.
He said all the kids have this one.
Jessie looked up at Julia and then down to the box and then to Tommy. Julia wasn't sure if the stunned silence was a good one or a bad one.
I've never had my own phone before, Jessie mumbled as she opened the box.
On top of the phone was the metal key Julia had had cut from the spare she kept under the plant pot next to the front door.
I thought it was about time you had your own key, Julia said, her voice shaking with nerves, since this is your home now too.
Jessie picked up the key and clenched it in her fist. She looked up at Julia, and it became obvious she was holding back tears. They smiled at each other, and Julia let her know it was okay not to thank her verbally with a little wink.
"You'll be able to call me on that gadget," Tommy said, pointing to the phone in the box. "I'm moving up to Manchester to stay with my brother for a little while."
"Your brother?"
Jessie dropped the key onto the counter and turned to Tommy.
"Manchester? You can't."
"I can, and I am," Tommy said, resting his hand on Jessie's shoulder. "You've coped without me all of these months, and rightly so. Julia is your family now, and you couldn't ask for a better mother."
Julia rested her hand on her chest, determined not to let another tear leave her eyes today. She had cried enough over the past 12 hours to last her a lifetime.
"I'll miss you,"
Jessie whispered, dropping her hair over her face.
"I'm only a train ride away," Tommy replied, tucking her hair behind her ear. "When I've got my own little place and I'm all settled, you can come and visit me. Promise?"
Jessie nodded, but she didn't look up. Julia could tell she was silently crying under her hair. As tough as Jessie wanted to act in front of other people, when it came to her family, she was still a vulnerable girl, and they were both the only family she had. Julia made a mental note to hold Tommy to that promise. She didn't doubt for a second that he wouldn't try his best to keep it. After they finished their coffees, there was a knock at the door. Julia left Jessie and Tommy chatting in the kitchen, and she hopped over Mowgli and into the hallway. Through the frosted glass panel, she made out the outline of Barker. Smiling like an excited schoolgirl, she pulled open the door.
"Afternoon, madam," Barker said, both of his hands behind his back. "I have a special delivery for a Julia South."
Barker pulled a bunch of 2 dozen white roses from behind his back and peered over the top, his eyes glittering at Julia.
"Who are they from?" she asked playfully, a grin spreading from ear to ear as she accepted the bouquet.
"A very charming and handsome man," Barker said as he stepped into the cottage. "But he wasn't available to deliver them, so you're stuck with me instead. I have something else for you too."
Barker pulled a plastic bag from behind his back, and Julia let out a huge sigh of relief when she saw her clothes, her purse, her phone, and her keys.
She had been embarrassed asking Sue to drive her to the shops and to pay for everything, but she was relieved to know she could pay her straight back. Julia took the flowers through to the kitchen and put them in a vase of water. Jessie and Tommy both smirked, glancing knowingly at each other. Barker hung back and tossed the bag onto the couch as Mowgli circled his feet. "Can we go somewhere and talk?" Barker asked. "Talk?" Jessie mocked under her breath. Julia pursed her lips at her before turning to Barker and noticing the sudden seriousness of his expression. She put the flowers on the counter, blocking Jessie's face, and walked through to her bedroom, motioning for Barker to follow. "Is this about Max and Stella?" Julia asked quietly as she closed her bedroom door. "Sit down." Barker perched on the edge of her bed, exhaled heavily, and looked up at the low-hanging beams in the ceiling, the seriousness of the bruises on his throat all the more obvious. "Sort of," he said, as she sat next to him, glad she had made her bed that morning. "Max is singing like a canary, telling them everything. He's still going with the God line, but they know it's a load of old codswallop. Stella only really knows Max's version of things, so I think they're leaning towards her being more of an accessory, or at least attempted murder. But that depends on the judge she gets. We all heard and saw her, and the main thing is she stopped, so I think a jury will look favourably on her. Max, on the other hand, he'll never breathe the air as a free man again. I'll make sure of that."
"I hope somebody takes over the soup kitchen," Julia whispered, staring at the rug against her dark floorboards. "It would be a shame if the good they did do stopped now."
"I love that your mind goes straight there," Barker said softly, nudging her gently with his shoulder. "I'm sure somebody will."
"At least it's all over."
"Yeah,"
Barker mumbled uncertainly. "You don't sound so sure."
"There was something else."
"What?" Julia edged forward and turned to him, her brows pinching together as she attempted to read the dark expression taking over his face. "What's happened?"
"This isn't your fault," Barker said, grabbing both of her hands tightly in his. "I want you to know that."
"What's not my fault?" Julia said, trying to sound firm, but her voice shaking. Barker inhaled deeply, glanced up to the ceiling and then down to her, a forced smile pushing the corners of his lips up.
"I'm under investigation at work," Barker said, dropping his head to the floor, "for operating outside of the official borders and for putting civilians in danger. I couldn't deny any of it after my statement and my involvement."
"Investigation?" Julia replied, shaking her head. "What does that mean?"
"It means they're going to look into my conduct," Barker said, his voice darkening. "They're going to try and see how well I do my job and if I deserve to keep it. I've been suspended without pay until they make a decision."
Julia pulled her hands away from Barker's and jumped up. She immediately started to pace her bedroom, her hands disappearing up through her hair. How could she have been so blinded by her own need to discover the truth? Had it been worth destroying Barker's career?
"Are they going to fire you?"
"Not necessarily." Barker jumped up and grabbed Julia's shoulders, forcing her still. "You did the right thing. We did the right thing. You were right about them never believing you. After Jerry, they had been questioning Carl Black, and they were close to charging him, because he didn't have an alibi. He might not be a very nice man, but he's not being charged for a murder he didn't commit because of you."
"But this has ruined your life." Julia sighed heavily, leaning into Barker's hand as he rested his palm on her cheek.
"Far from it," Barker whispered, pulling her in closer. "Even the darkest clouds have silver linings. You said a lot of things when you were trying to get Stella not to kill me. I wouldn't blame you if you stretched the truth to get through to her."
"I meant every word," Julia said automatically, without taking a second to think about it. She didn't need to.
Barker pulled her in, and he softly brushed his lips up against hers.
all of the stress and the trouble her meddling had caused melted away. She was old enough to know happy endings didn't exist, but she felt as close to happy as a person could be in that moment, and that was enough for her. They pulled away, their eyes slowly opening and their smiles spreading.
"I love you too,"
Barker said, cupping both of her cheeks in his hands. "And since you asked, my favourite colour is green, like your eyes, and my middle name is Fergus. Don't ask, my mother was Irish."
"But you love your job too," Julia mumbled, her stomach knotting out of control as her heart thumped wildly in her chest.
"It's just a job," Barker said, shrugging and letting go of Julia's face. "Some things are more important."
Hand in hand, they walked through to the kitchen. Julia didn't care about Jessie's sideways glances or even what the village would say. They could talk all they wanted because she had realised what and who was most important to her. Tommy had been right about family being important, but she knew he hadn't just been talking about the family people are born with, but the family people choose. The people at Fenton Industrial Park had been a family. Jessie and Tommy were family, and Julia felt like she had just added three new people to hers. Inhaling the floral scent of the white roses, she squeezed Barker's hand and smiled at Jessie through the petals as she hugged Mowgli, knowing she was more than ready for whatever life threw at them next. The End.
You've been listening to Donuts and Deception by Agatha Frost. Narrated by Rebecca Courtney. Published by Whole Story Quest, an imprint of W.F. Howes Limited. This work is copyrighted 2017 Pink Tree Publishing. This recording is copyrighted 2018 W.F. Howes Limited.
Audible hopes you've enjoyed this program.